It's time to talk sports. It's Hacksaw's Headlines, a panorama of the world of sports, stories, comments, and opinions.
Touchdown, San Diego!
Now, here's iconic sports talk show host Lee Hacksaw Hamilton and co-host John Riley.
Who wants to talk sports on a Thursday? We do. From the Dixie Line Lumber and Home Center studios in San Diego, we welcome you to Hacksaw's Headlines, our Thursday podcast. Good afternoon, everyone. This is Lee Hacksaw Hamilton, along with my co-host, John Riley. We welcome you as we go towards a great sports weekend. Absolute ton of late-breaking stories and topics on the table. Our podcast, weekly, brought to you by Dixie Line Lumber and Home Centers. There are 9 stores to serve you in San Diego. If you have projects for home or at work, you need Dixie Line Lumber. And by North County Eye Centers of Poway and Escondido. We all need help with our eyes. When that time comes, think of them. These are the professionals in the business serving San Diego since the 1970s. North County Eye Center, Poway and Escondido. John Riley, good afternoon. Man, we got a lot to talk about.
Yeah, I mean, you were just rushing here from the press conference. And I mean, we still have to talk a little bit about last week's show. Maybe we'll get to that. But the fans loved having Coach on board.
I agree with you wholeheartedly. And we'll think more about that as we go forward. Couple of program notes. If you like sports, check my website. That's the address right across the top, LeeHacksawHamilton.com. It's all written. You check it every morning. You'll know everything there is in the world of sports. And we started this almost from the beginning of our podcast about 15 months ago. We wanted fans involved. Do you think the fans are lined up? It's like the plane's trying to land at LAX. It's called Fans Forum. John, quickly explain how everybody watching us on live stream here and from our Canadian network can join us.
Yeah, so if you want to get involved in Fans Forum, just drop your take in the live chat on Facebook, YouTube, or on X. I got to say X now instead of Twitter. And get involved. Already, we got tons of people that are piling in. So if you got a question or comment for Lee, just drop it in the live chat.
And a reminder, we invite you to share with everybody. Tell your friends what we're doing with my website, what we're doing with the podcast on the YouTube channel. And we want you to subscribe. Therefore, you will get when we can post them. Sometimes it's in the middle of the night. You'll get alerts to all the things we're putting up on our YouTube channel. John, lots of topics. Let's start college basketball. Ready, set, go.
Ready, set, go. Okay, let's talk Aztecs. How was that press conference?
I just came from the season-ending press conference with San Diego State's basketball coach, Brian Dutcher, a.k.a. Rich Man. Aztec basketball's got one more home game Friday night. Boise State vault into the Mountain West Conference tournament in what has been an upside-down college basketball season. The Mountain West is just phenomenal. The transfer portal has changed everything in the Mountain West Conference. Everybody's got players. There are 5, maybe 6 teams that could go to March Madness. Aztecs, they're on a bit of a roller coaster. The record is 22-8. You know, who are they right now? Are they a complete basketball team? They got killed at UNLV. In your grill defense. Holy cow, the way the Rebels played in the first half of that game. They held San Diego State to 22% shooting in the first half, 29% for the entire game. Aztecs, the Aztecs with their tradition, their legacy, 0 for 13 to start the game shooting from the floor, 2 for 25 over the first 15 minutes. On top of that, Rebels had 8 block shots in and around the basket, but San Diego State went to the full court press really early late in the first half when there was such a deficit down 17, and they wiped out that lead. They got back in it, and the Aztec bigs, the young guys, the bad boys, they combined to hit 8 threes in the game. Tough night for Jaden Ledee, the All-American, first-round draft pick. He was 2 for 13 shooting. The guards were hot, then the guards were cold. I think everything changes once we get done with the Boise State game on Friday that they should win. Everything changes. They go to Vegas. They play on the neutral floor. And if that's not enough, Brian Dutcher, lifetime contract extension at San Diego State. They rip up the old deal. It takes him through 2028. Also, there's a $10 million buyout that he agreed to. So he's not leaving here to go anywhere else. If he were, he would have left when he was Steve Fisher's right-hand man and he was a hot candidate, or he would have left very early after he'd taken over as head coach. These numbers are amazing. The man gets no national recognition. career record 172-55 at a Mountain West school. Mountain West record 92-31. Postseason tournament record, toughest time of the year, 15-3.
Wow.
We're talking about a hell of a coach who just got a hell of a contract. At the end of the press conference walking out, I made the comment, "You have any loose change in your pocket, coach? Would you like to make a contribution to the working media's beer fund?" He laughed and walked on. But what a great coach, great man, great program. Tough times on the road. They're 0-6. 0-6 in hostile environments this year in the Mountain West Conference. But like I say, John, they go to neutral floor, Mountain West tournament. Aztecs, I think, are going to do well. What a great season for the entire conference. John, the basketball floor is yours.
The basketball floor is mine. First of all, you know, kudos to the Dutcher. I mean, what a great coach, what a great man. But he could make a lot more money if he was in one of the Power Five conferences. And I know they've been asking for him, but he just seems to like San Diego. So you got to give it up there.
Well, it was $1.4 million. Bumped to 2.3 immediately. And that's because Ohio State was out there and was going to make an overture, but he didn't want to leave. He could have left a long time ago. So he deserves the payday, but it's paltry in comparison to other people around the country. I mean, when John Calipari is making $8 million a year, et cetera, but this is what they can afford. This is what they gave him. This is what he's willing to accept. And he's established here. He lives a block from me in Rancho Bernardo.
Well, you know, he is now the highest paid state employee in the Cal State University system. It's amazing. Usually that goes to a football coach. But I think that game at UNLV, oh my God. I mean, that was brutal to start the game. They couldn't make.
I heard you yelling at your TV.
I mean, all these little chippies and they were missing and balls that went halfway down the cylinder and then zipped out. It was like they were cursed. So that game was, I mean, it seems like Ladie, you know, he gets the ball, he gets triple teamed and he's banging around. It seems like I wish he wouldn't be, you know, so focused on trying to outmuscle everybody sometimes. You got to move the ball around to break out that, you know, triple team. But we all knew UNLV was going to be good, and they're scary good for this tournament.
Well, it's a lot of scary people. I think the whole landscape, I was on a talk show in Las Vegas last night, the whole landscape, I think, has drastically changed in the Mountain West Conference. And it's not just the transfer portal. If you look at some of the rosters, they got players from Oklahoma, Oklahoma State, Auburn. But I think the wild card is they have dipped to lower Division I levels. Mid-American Conference, Conference USA, Southern. And they've dipped to Division II and found guys who can then elevate themselves, come into this level and play. I mean, Utah State is made up of, it's the University of Transfers, but they got small college guys from D1AA and D2 schools that moved in who can play at this level. So the transfer portal, which usually meant North Carolina come and cherry pick anybody they want, transfer portal is different for the Mountain West, but these schools, these coaches, have found players. It's made a huge difference. I think the Mountain West tournament is just going to be upside down.
Well, it's not so much just the D2 or the D1A guys coming up. But, you know, those twin brothers for the Rebels, they came from, what was it, Oklahoma State, I think. You know, so, well, I don't know if they're twins or not, but they're brothers. But, yeah, the transfer portal has completely changed the landscape of it. And even in spite of that, Dutcher still wins. Now, granted, he's having a tough time winning on the road. I'm with you, Lee. I think when they're in Vegas and Aztec Nation goes rolling into Viejas East, I think they've got a good shot.
And, you know, he kind of glared and stared at me because I asked a question about six straight losses in hostile environments. And he said, "Lee, we lost on the last shot. We had the last possession. We could have won, et cetera, et cetera." Granted, they've been in big holes. They've grinded out of the holes, gotten back into games, et cetera. But they're 0-6. That being said, tournament time, neutral floor, a.k.a. wearing red and black. Mm-hmm. I think the conference is – the tournament is just – you're going to call in sick, just not go to work. So we know what she's conference. I can't wait.
It's March Madness, baby.
I think it's really going to be fun.
Yeah. So, you know, I mean, the other teams are going to be tough, though. New Mexico could also surprise in that tournament.
So we move on. We got San Diego State basketball, something to pay attention to. Next question, John.
All right, let's talk a little bit about the NFL trade, or excuse me, the salary cuts are coming. People are losing their jobs.
Well, we got a lot of things going on around the National Football League. Everybody, not everybody, a lot of teams have real significant issues with the salary cap. Even though the cap has gone up $30 million this season, the cap is going to be $255, I believe it is. There are teams that got all types of contract issues. The Chargers have begun paring their roster. Chargers at one point were $45 million over the cap. The Bolts now are down to about $21 million above the cap. They've restructured and will get rid of their center, Corey Linsley. They just got rid of Eric Hendricks. He's gone. That's a big cap savings. They've wiped out, I want to say, $17 million in cap issue problems already, but they still got $21 million to go. So now we just have to wait and see what is going to transpire. And that, you know, does that mean Mike Williams, wide receiver? Yeah, probably. Does it mean Joey Bosa? Boy, that'd be hard to swallow if they got rid of him, because when he's played, he's been pretty good, but he has not played as much because he's had injury after injury after injury. So we're just going to have to just wait and see how many more names there the Chargers are going to lop off, but they're going to be guys who are going to be cut loose. The big story is what's happened in Buffalo. They're gutting their defense. The Buffalo Bills yesterday got rid of Trey White, their Pro Bowl cornerback. It is a huge setback for them. They've gotten rid of linebackers. They got rid of two of their safeties. They're way above the cap, so they've had to cut loose. I think they've cut loose $25 million in cap money in about the last 24 hours. In Seattle, I mean, this was a real stunner what happened there. The Seahawks got rid of both their safeties, led by a very controversial guy, Jamal Adams, who's involved with a lot of junk off the field and didn't play real well and had a lot of injury issues. And they got rid of Condre Diggs, their other safety, and they got rid of one of their tight ends, Will Disley. So they've had to move a lot of guys off the roster, and all of a sudden the Seahawks just don't look like the same football team because of cap complications. Philadelphia's moving people off their roster. They're letting their running backs go. Philadelphia, there's a rumor out there that they're going to make a bid on one of the big running backs who's a free agent effective next Tuesday. Could you imagine Saquon Barkley changing mailing addresses and Saquon Barkley going from the New York Football Giants, going across the river to the Philadelphia Eagles in the same division? That rumor is out there. And then there's the entire Minnesota situation, a very unstable situation at quarterback with Kirk Cousins being a free agent, and they got cap problems, and they got two guys that got to desperately have to resign, led by their star tight end Danielle Hunter. They just let go their leading rusher, Alex Mattison. Now, that's because he had a significant dollar value attached to him, but Mattison also was a fumbler, so they let him go. And it's just beginning. You will see going forward, like Dallas as of today is about to release their Pro Bowl left tackle Tyron Smith. It's a money issue, injury issue also with him. So you're going to see a lot more transactions involving name guys that are going to get flooded onto the free agent market effective when the window opens next Tuesday. You're going to see more players available. They'll have to sign contracts at lower dollar values. So fascinating to see what's happened in the NFL. All right, Chargers, because that was our team here, what do you think they do? Do they dare get rid of Bosa? Can they afford to get rid of Bosa? I don't think they can trade Mike Williams because of the cap number and because of injury history. You surely wouldn't get rid of maybe a potential Hall of Famer like Keenan Allen. So what do you think the Chargers do?
Well, I think they've got to drop some players, right, Lee?
Yes.
I mean, but like you said, like if Bosa's making, I don't know, what was it, $30 million a year?
His contract's 24, but because of bonuses and restructures, his cap figure's like 36.
Yeah, and then if you cut him, don't pay him, but you still have a cap dead money to come over. So the math is complicated. I mean, it just seems like they've got to get rid of some guys just to clear some space. But it might make sense, you know, with the new regime rolling in. The thing that's interesting to me is how the NFL does not have guaranteed contracts. So
unless you give the star guy a guaranteed contract. All contracts are not guaranteed. But if you're negotiating and come my team as a free agent and you want a 5-year deal and you want the first 2.5 years or 3 years protected, guaranteed, some marquee players are getting a chunk of their contracts guaranteed. But when you throw signing bonus money into it, then it's just very complicated math.
And yeah,
you cut math class. I didn't go. I went uptown drinking the night they taught math in college. But it is the layers of complexities for the salary cap kind of make it hard to really explain. But you can get a partial guarantee contract. You can get a signing bonus. And all that filters in to how you configure the salary cap hit.
Well, just imagine for a moment that the NFL had the same guarantee contract structure as Major League Baseball. I mean, what would you do when you're over the salary cap? You can't cut guys. You still got to pay them. So you'd have to maybe hope for a trade, or you would just be way the heck over the cap. So what do these NFL teams do when they're over the cap? Do they get penalized, or what is the story?
Well, you get dead money. If you're over, you're talking about start of the season, you got to be below the cap number.
Right.
So the cap is 255 effective next week. You got to be 255.
Oh, so you can't be over and get a penalty?
No, no. Your penalty is the dead money that you're not going to be able to use the following year if you have to cut the guy. If the Chargers have to cut Bosa, his salary comes off. Mm-hmm. So they push themselves below the cap. But they take a $12 or $14 million dead money hit, and that's $12 or $14 that they can't use this season.
Right. Yeah, so it's complicated.
It's new math.
But in the end, they've got to cut guys. And like I said, I think this may work out really well for Harbaugh and his guys so they can really get their team, their players on the field.
Oh, Mr. Optimistic. You need players if you're going to play the game, John.
Yeah.
You can't. Please don't tell me that by blowing out Bosa and Mike Williams and Eric Kendricks and some other guy that you're going to have the same. It's not going to be the same. There's no Austin Eckler either. It's not going to be the same team.
But they don't win with those guys. Okay. So why not get rid of those star players and start over?
Your tolerance level's unbelievable. Hey, Fans Forum, you're just joining us on our live stream. You're an NFL fan. You're a Charger fan. You want to talk about what we just talked about? Dive in. Go to the chat box right now. Ask a question. Get ready for an answer. You may like it. You may dislike it. Too bad for you. But we're letting you be part of our show, Fans Forum, right at the end. We're not done with football topics on the table. I got a really interesting one I'm going to throw at you. Go ahead.
Okay, we're talking NFL trades here. We're going to talk a little history, too.
Yeah, let's first of all talk about the Russell Wilson situation. The Broncos cut him loose. Broncos are swallowing $39 million of their salary, a cap hit. Cap hit this year and a cap hit next year. The Broncos have given Russell Wilson permission right now, as of this morning, to be able to go talk to teams as a free agent, even though he's not going to become, quote, an official free agent till June 1st. So they're going to try to facilitate helping him land where he wants to go, get whatever contract. The thing is that, what's your favorite NFL team?
The 49ers is my
okay.
team.
Just if the 49ers wanted Russell Wilson, they could sign him to the veterans minimum, which is 1.5 mil.
Oh.
That's it. Russell gets all 39 from Denver. So he will be an acquisition, a short-term rental for somebody, a Pro Bowl quarterback, for 1.5 million this year. They would then either keep him the following year or just use him for one season and go somewhere else. I was told this morning the Pittsburgh Steelers have set up a meeting to meet with Russell Wilson. Now, the question is, does Pittsburgh want to develop their young quarterbacks? Do they draft a young quarterback? Or do they rent a Russell Wilson for a year or two and get him dirt free at 1.5 mil? So that's how this situation works. So Denver has allowed him to go. Now, I went back and did some research. Bear with me here so I can read what I wrote. In the history of the NFL, Russell Wilson trade has to go down maybe as bad as some of the others. Denver, Seattle, when they traded Wilson, the Broncos gave up two number ones, two number twos, and three players, including young quarterback Drew Locke.
Unbelievable.
Then they gave him. No, it's not. Now, this is unbelievable. They gave him $242 million guaranteed, and now they've cut him, and they got an $85 million cap hit. His record in Denver was 11-19. He played for Nathaniel Hackett. That was a horrible hire as head coach. Played for Sean Payton. Payton benched him at the end of the season. So just think of what Denver gave up. 1-1, 2-2. A three, and three players, gave him 242, and then had to take an $85 million cap hit to get rid of him. How'd that trade work out?
Yeah, not good. I mean, that GM is still employed in Denver, right?
Yeah. Now, the Cleveland Browns. And again, these are modern day trades. Modern day because of the salary cap. The rules are really different. Cleveland Browns, Deshaun Watson. And they got him from Houston. They gave up a 1, a 1, a 3, and a 4. That's a pretty significant price.
Yeah.
They gave him $232 million, all of it guaranteed.
That's right. All of it. Every year.
Despite all the junk with the masseuses and all that that he got himself sued for with the Houston Texans. They guaranteed him. The guy has played 12 of 34 games in 2 years.
Unbelievable.
Suspension first this past year. Severe shoulder injury, a.k.a. surgery. So that was a hell of a price to give with a lot of guaranteed money. And I think we can judge right now, at least 2 years in, boy, that trade didn't work out for Cleveland. Okay, now let's go to the modern day era. And this might be the all-time worst trade. You do remember Herschel Walker, Dallas Cowboys, the arrival of Jimmy Johnson. Jerry Jones gave him the key to the player personnel room. Jimmy Johnson went in and cleaned it out. He traded Herschel Walker to Minnesota. Hold on to the table. Minnesota gave up 3 number ones, 2 number twos, 3 number threes, and 5 players.
Oh, my God.
It was a massive deal. It was like a 15-player, 16-player transaction. Jimmy Johnson got rid of the big contract of Herschel Walker. Jimmy Johnson flipped those draft picks into a wide variety of players to acquire. He wound up with Emmitt Smith, Russell Maryland, Darren Woodson, quarterback Steve Walsh, amongst the players that came from the picks they got from Minnesota. Herschel Walker staggered through 2 injury seasons, didn't amount to a hill of beans, out of football. Historically, that might be the worst modern-day trade of all time. I mean, just think of that. 3 ones, 2 twos, 3 threes, and 5 players, all to Dallas for Herschel Walker, who was effectively done. Then, back in 1987, Rams, Colts, Buffalo, 3-way deal in the middle of the season, right before the trade deadline. Indianapolis winds up with Eric Dickerson, came from the Rams. Buffalo winds up flip-flopping picks with Cornelius Bennett, Hall of Fame type pass rusher, really fine player out of Alabama. And the Rams got a 1, a 1, a 1, a 2, a 2, a 2, and 2 running backs in the transaction. Plus, they got, obviously, a lot of budget space. So Eric Dickerson going to the Colts in a 3-way deal with really benefited the Rams. Now, way back in the day, Buffalo and your 49ers, O.J. Simpson. Do you remember O.J. Simpson was traded to San Francisco?
Oh, I remember.
The juice did not have much juice left when he got there. It cost them a 1, a 2, a 3, and a 4. San Francisco traded their top 4 picks to get O.J. Simpson.
Unbelievable.
And he got there, he'd come off surgery, never, ever the same player again. And do you remember Mike Ditko? Not just Bears coach. Mike Ditko is coach-general manager, New Orleans Saints.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah.
How about this trade? Ditka traded all of his draft picks in one season, picks 1 through 6, plus a 1 and a 2 the next year to get Ricky Williams from Miami. He made that trade, and he got Ricky Williams to come to New Orleans. Ricky played there for 3 years, flamed out, became a marijuana entrepreneur, wound up going to the Dolphins, played a brief time there. End of story. Mike Ditka might have been a great coach, not a very good general.
Did Ricky Williams show up like in a bridal gown at his press conference?
Oh, yeah.
It was something crazy.
A bizarro, yes.
Yeah.
Okay, so those are modern-day trades. The Herschel Walker trade, I think, has to be the all-time worst. And then back in the day, and I'll be reaching for some names that people who don't have gray hair wouldn't probably identify with. How about this trade? Chicago Cardinals, L.A. Rams. Remember the name Ollie Mattson?
That's going way before my time.
That was a great running back in the 1950s, close to the 60s. The Rams dealt 9 players and 2 picks. Ollie Mattson goes to the Chicago Cardinals. The Rams wound up with some really good linemen from that trade. Ken Panfil, Frank Fuller, Art Hauser. These are all really old names. Those of us who have gray hair will remember this, but that was like a 15-player trade. Then way back in the day, you do know the name Don Shula.
Yeah.
Don Shula was part of a 15-player trade from the Cleveland Browns to the Baltimore Colts.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, it was a really fascinating
deal.
As a
player or as a coach?
As a player.
Mm.
Guys like Mike McCormick, Don Colo, great defensive linemen, offensive linemen, wound up going to the Cleveland Browns. Don Shula was the cornerback, was part of this team.
Oh, interesting.
They went from Cleveland to the Baltimore Colts. Do you remember George Allen?
Oh, yeah, of course. Yeah,
you know, the
Redskins, right?
Redskins.
Yeah.
You know, the Rams adopted his philosophy a couple of years ago, F them draft picks.
Yeah.
So the Redskins made a deal with the Rams. Marlon McKeever, really good defensive player. He goes from the Redskins to the Rams, and the Redskins get a whole bunch of linebackers. You'll probably remember some of these names. Maxie Bawn, Jack Pardee, Myron Patios. That was all part of the George Allen era. That was a big trade. And way back, even before my time, the biggest trade of all time was the then Dallas Texans and the Rams. The Dallas Texans were the first, quote, pro football team, didn't last very long. They became the Baltimore Colts. The Dallas Texans and the Rams. Dallas got 11 players from the Rams for one.
11 to one?
The player was Les Richter, went to the Rams, great, great linebacker, stayed in the NFL like 13 years and then became a NASCAR executive. The Rams got Les Richter in this deal from Dallas, an 11 for one trade. So those are the history of just unbelievable deals. So as you sit there in angst about Denver and what they gave Seattle to get Russell Wilson, and you look at what the Browns gave to get Deshaun Watson, think about the Herschel Walker trade that Jimmy Johnson engineered, the Eric Dickerson trade, the O.J. Simpson trade, the Ricky Williams fiasco, and then Ollie Mattson way back in the day. It's fascinating. It took me about 50 minutes to go through and research each of these deals and said, oh, yeah, I remember reading about that trade. It's phenomenal. I mean, you get a 15-player trade, 11 for one. I get you couldn't do it now in the salary cap era.
Of course not.
But so, John, go ahead. Sort all this out.
Sort it out. I mean, first of all, it's incredible, some of these deals. That Herschel Walker deal totally set up Jimmy Johnson to have that run in the early 90s. But the one that I remember, I was a little kid, is when O.J. Simpson came to the 49ers. And it was an interesting time because the Niners, they had John Brody and Gene Washington and Vic Washington in the early 70s. And they would get to the playoffs. They always got knocked off by the Dallas Cowboys. And then I think Brody retired. And they went, they took a dip down. And then the Niners traded first of all, for Jim Plunkett.
Right.
And then they traded for O.J., you know, and gave up a ton of picks. And they were terrible.
Well, Plunkett had been battered in New England.
Yeah.
He got there and couldn't throw the football. And O.J. had come off surgery after the electric company seasons with the juice in Buffalo. And he had nothing left. Just disastrous.
He probably got hurt running through the airport, you know, at Hertz rental car. But the other part of the story that's interesting is that my mother actually worked with OJ's sister at a trucking company in the city of San Francisco. They both worked in the accounting department. And they were really good friends. And OJ, you know, is from San Francisco. He went to the City College of San Francisco before going to USC. So it was a nice homecoming, you know, for San Francisco fans. But the trade was a disaster. The Niners had like a little bit of a run like in the late 70s with that the Gold Rush defense.
Yes.
They had all the defensive linemen, but it wasn't until Joe Montana came rolling into town that they got saved.
Yeah. Big trades. I mean, if you got spare time, you just Google NFL's biggest trades, you'll be floored. So I tried to give you a thumbnail sketch of the biggest transactions. And of course, that was a different era before the salary cap and the mega contracts and all that. Back then you were trading player for player. Now you're trading dollars and contracts and out clauses and guarantees.
Well, it's like the way the NBA makes trades. They're just moving money around.
Exactly. Hey, we get to halftime. Couple of reminders. If you like what we're doing on this podcast, ask you to share and subscribe to everything we're doing so you'll get the alerts every time we put something up on our YouTube channel. You like sports? Check my website, LeeHacksawHamilton.com. It's written. It'll be there every morning. You'll know every story there is in the world of sports, this side of the border and that side of the border. And of course, at the end of our podcast here, we're doing what he created. It's called Fans Forum.
Fans Forum. So this is your chance to get involved. If you have a question or comment for Lee, you know, anything going on in the world of sports, especially with the NFL, you know, guys getting cut. We have the NHL trade deadline we're going to get to in a minute. If you have some questions or comments, drop it in the live chat on Facebook, Twitter, or excuse me, Facebook X or YouTube.
And a reminder, we're here at halftime. Our podcast is brought to you by North County Eye Center of Poway and Escondido. Comprehensive, high care, state-of-the-art technology from cataracts to glaucoma to cornea issues, extensive screenings too. North County Eye Center, Poway, Escondido. And our Thursday podcast is also brought to you by Dixie Line Lumber and Home Centers. There are 9 stores to serve you in San Diego. If you've got projects, John, you've done a lot of things in your home, from a brand new front door to windows to decking around the pool. Your best friend, aside from me, Dixie Line Lumber.
Dixie Line Lumber, man, these guys will set you up. They've been in San Diego for over 100 years. They've got, you know, lumber, building materials, doors, windows, kitchen, bath, decking. It's an unbelievable company.
And these are the people we ask you to go see. You got projects, fix it, build it. You will enjoy it in 2024 at Dixie Line Lumber. And before we go to the second half, one other reminder, if you like what we're doing, we'll invite you to join our insiders group. You go to my website, LeeHacksawHamilton.com. Right on the homepage, there's a big orange box. Fill it out. You'll get emails. You'll get alerts, projects that we're working on, things we're going to roll out in 2024. Hope you become part of Hacksaw's insiders group. Okay, so we have talked hoops, we've talked football, let's talk baseball spring training.
Yeah, I saw some of this breaking news yesterday with the Red Sox. They've got some trouble.
Oh, this is really bad. Red Sox spent an inordinate amount of money to sign Lucas Giolito from the Chicago White Sox, bounced around a little bit last year, but he's been a workhorse. He tore the elbow ligament in his right arm. Surgery coming up, probably gone for the year. You look at the Red Sox rotation, you say, who are these guys? You know, the number two starter is a guy by the name of Nick Pivetta. He's kind of bounced all over the line. Who? That's right. Don't be insulting. So, Red Sox, this is a massive setback because they gave Giolito, I want to say, 2 years, $32 million, and now he's gone. He's probably gone for the entire season. That's a terrible blow there. Second one is the Oakland Athletics. We've heard a lot of variations about where they're going to play in the interim until the new baseball stadium is built in Las Vegas. We're talking 2025, 26, and 27. All types of variations. This one's a really weird one. There is conversation now that the A's have gone to Major League Baseball and have asked Major League Baseball to intercede so they can play a chunk of their schedule at Oracle Stadium, San Francisco.
Right.
A chunk of their stadium at the AAA Stadium in Sacramento. Mm-hmm. And now they've approached the Angels about playing a chunk of their schedule in Anaheim.
Wow.
Now, why would the Angels allow anybody else to come into their marketplace? You know, why would the Giants want to share anything with Oakland, although Oakland is such a downtrodden, face-in-the-gutter franchise? Maybe it wouldn't have an impact. But now they've asked baseball to come in and try to help negotiate. Giants have evidently indicated, well, when we go on long road trips, maybe we'll allow you to have access to 20 dates. You could play 20 of your 81 home games maybe here for money.
Yeah, of course.
The Angels have not responded. But why would the Angels want to have another team come in to play 40, 50 dates? Although who would go see the Oakland A's, last place Oakland A's? No chance of competing Oakland A's. Mm-hmm. And then you got the Sacramento situation. I mean, this has been so weird because they've looked at all these minor league stadiums and they're trying to configure maybe we should just play games in Las Vegas and Reno in the two AAA stadiums and just market ourselves for the next couple of years as Nevada's team. You know, but They have a $70 million TV contract, and it's negated. If they leave Northern California, they leave the market, the contract goes away. So that's why all of a sudden now they're trying to get the Giants back into the conversation, and now they approach the Angels. So you got that. And then one other note, that Hall of Fame slip of paper you had, put it back in your pocket.
Okay.
You know, you were ready to vote Yash Yamamoto into the Baseball Hall of Fame.
Yeah, he's the ace of the Dodgers pitching staff, yeah, right?
Did you hear what happened yesterday?
He got lit up.
There's concern that Yamamoto is tipping his pitches.
Oh.
That's item one. They think mechanically, if he is, they can solve it. For some reason, he could not pitch out of the stretch yesterday.
Really?
He just really struggled mechanically. Yamamoto, three innings, and this is the guy that throws 95 and his ERA is 1.20 in Japan and all that,
yeah,
and had the great dominant first start. Three innings yesterday, five runs, six hits, three walks. He could not get anybody out, and they finally had to go out to the mound and drag him off. He really got lit. So you can't vote for him for the Hall of Fame this week.
Okay.
But anyhow, so there we are. John, your thoughts on how bad this Red Sox situation is, Yamamoto and the Oakland A's. You got any space in your backyard to play home game?
Yeah, really. I mean, they got to find something. I'll just quick comments on each of those. First of all, Giolito, to me, was never really an ace, but he got big money, you know? And it seems like the Red Sox kind of reached when they signed him, and now he's down. That's got to be just a, you know, a punch in the gut for the Red Sox fans.
No, you need to Google their roster, and then you'll be calling me back and saying, who the hell are these guys?
Well, there was another pitcher on the team that just got an extension that I never even heard of him before.
Yeah, well, they also traded Chris Sale to the Atlanta Braves.
Yeah, exactly. So I don't know what the hell's going on over there. Now, as far as the A's, I mean, Sacramento makes the most sense. I mean, it'd be better for them to move into almost like a really good college stadium even, you know, at Cal Berkeley or at Stanford. I mean, that would work out better than, you know, going down to Anaheim. It reminds me of like when the Golden State Warriors first started, because they were kind of a mobile team. They used to play some games in San Diego way back in the day. But the A's, everything is going wrong there for that franchise. And then finally, we have with the Dodgers. Well, I mean, Yamamoto, maybe, you know, nerves, you know, big contract, Dodgers, all the focus, case of the yips, you know, like Steve Sachs couldn't throw the ball to first base, something like that.
He didn't show that the first start. First start, he was dazzling.
Really?
Yeah, three innings, one hit, five strikeouts.
Wow.
Clocked at 95, and he came out there yesterday, and he was so out of sync, and they just could not settle him down. I'm trying to remember what the max limit is. Coaches and managers go to the mound and talk to a pitcher. Like, you can only visit the mound twice in an inning, then you got to yank the guy.
Yeah.
Dave Roberts went out. The pitching coach went out. They couldn't settle him down, and he finally admitted afterwards he could not get comfortable working out of the stretch.
Wow. That is crazy. Who was that other pitcher that was on the Red Sox and Cubs that couldn't throw to first base?
It was a relief pitcher, yeah.
No, there was a starter. It was a really good starter. Was it John Lester?
The left-hander?
It was left-hander, and when a runner got on first base, they would just go.
Lollipops.
Yeah,
because he couldn't.
Because it was all mental, you know? So Yamamoto might be going through a thing, but, remember when Robert Suarez first came in, first game for the Padres, opening day against Arizona, he gives up the home run. So you can see how these guys, they get into the spotlight for the first time in America, and that's a lot of weight on your shoulders to perform.
Yeah, but this guy's had a lot of weight on his shoulders his whole great young career. I mean, John, he had three straight years. His ERA in Japan was 1.2 to 1.5.
It's like the Bob Gibson of the Japan.
You're talking about dominant, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, so that's where we are in that segment of baseball. This is kind of an off-the-wall day. You know, we did this whole thing on the NFL trades.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, get ready for this one. Go ahead.
All right. Yankees, bad trade? I mean, you're not talking about Soto, are you?
No. This has got nothing to do with that. Yankees have a history of making trades. The Babe Ruth deal.
Oh, yeah, of course.
The greatest trade of all time, I guess, back in the day with the Red Sox. They traded for Alex Rodriguez. They traded for Roger Clemens. They traded for Ricky Henderson. Do you know what this week is, John? No, you don't. I'm pulling this one out of left field.
Okay.
Well, maybe you're out in left field sometime.
Yeah.
You'd see it out there dug in the dirt. This is the 51st anniversary of the all-time worst trade.
Oh.
It involved two Yankee pitchers, Mike Kekich and Fritz Peterson. 51 years ago, the two left-handed pitchers traded.
Is that the one with the wives?
Wives and kids.
Yeah, I remember that because I remember Fritz Peterson's name. That was nuts. That was nuts.
The commissioner went crazy. It was 51 years ago. The commissioner could not intercede. The union said, this is a non-baseball thing. We have no power. You have no power to discipline them. Fritz Peterson and Mike Kekich, two left-handed pitchers of the Yankees, swap their wives and kids.
And kids?
Yes. Peterson is still married to the same woman, Mike Kekich's former wife.
Good for him.
Mike Kekich said, uh-oh, this is not working out. He filed for divorce within 2 years, and she left him. 51 years ago, we've talked about bad trades.
But, you know, that was in the 1970s.
A different world.
It was a different world, man. People were swinging and all that going on. You know, have you ever seen that TV show Wife Swap?
I've heard of it.
Yeah, I've watched a few episodes of it, and it's nuts. You know, you take one person and throw them in with another family.
That's bad TV, though.
It's like watching a train wreck. But I do remember that trade, and I remember I was a little kid, and I was kind of confused. Like, swapping wives, what is this? But the players didn't change, right? The players were still Yankees and Cleveland, right?
And they eventually wound up trading Kekich to Cleveland afterwards.
Oh, yeah, because his wife was there, right? Yeah. His new wife.
Anyhow, for those of you keeping score at home, 51 years ago this week, Fritz Peterson, Mike Kekich traded wives and kids. How different is that? And what's it like to be in the clubhouse with a teammate? How's my wife?
You know, but it's interesting, too, because like the Towers for the Padres. Remember he traded like a ball player for like an exercise machine or something, or like a treadmill. And then I remember there's other cases of when managers have been traded. Yep. Was it the A's manager was traded to the Pirates for Manny Sanguian? Who was that? Phil Garner.
Chuck Tanner?
Or maybe it was Chuck Tanner. I don't know. One of them was traded for a catcher.
But there've been managerial trades off and on. Some of them pulled by the Yankees, and obviously some of them done by Charlie Finley, who was obviously off in a different solar system.
Yes, he was.
So that's the story in baseball. Okay, let's circle this back here. NHL trade deadline is Friday. We have had 9 trades in the last day and a half. I think we're at 17 trades total in the last 2 weeks. Everybody is swapping out contracts and in some cases getting players on rentals to try to push themselves to the Stanley Cup. Anaheim Ducks have made a couple of deals. One of them was with the Edmonton Oilers. The Ducks traded two really good guys. Adam Henrik, the veteran center, scored 18 goals this year. And Sam Carrick, a San Diego goal player who got to Anaheim and they never got him out of the room because he played so hard and played so well and filled a certain role. Henrik and Carrick go to the Edmonton Oilers for a number one draft pick and a number five. Then today, Ducks made another trade. They traded Jacob Perreault, who had been here with the San Diego Gulls. He kind of hit a wall, had not grown as a goal scorer. He got traded to the Montreal Canadiens for a young goal scorer in the American Hockey League. It's got 13 goals this season. Here's an interesting statistic. As tough as this Ducks season is to watch now, the Ducks now own 10 draft picks in June. They own a 1 and a 1. They own 2 2s. And they own 3 3 3s. So they've got a lot of currency in the first 3 rounds of this draft. It sounds great in theory, but the reality is draft picks and cap space can't go on the ice and win games for you the rest of the season. They're going to be miserable the rest of the season. So the Ducks have made a couple of trades. Las Vegas, last night, huge trade. Calgary is in fire sale mode. Calgary's traded a lot of guys away. They traded Noah Hanifin, really high-scoring defenseman. He goes to Vegas. He's a short-term rental, though Vegas is going to sign him to an extension. He goes for a 1 and a 5. Calgary also, prior, had traded Elias Lindholm, goal scorer. He went to Vancouver. This guy's got firepower, and Vancouver has just loaded this thing to try to get to the Stanley Cup Finals. Florida made a trade. They get former 40-goal scorer Vladimir Tarasenko. He comes from the Ottawa Senators. He's just not the same player. He'd been with the St. Louis Blues, been with the Rangers. Then he wound up making the move. Tarasenko goes from Ottawa on a 1-year contract to Florida. Really good trade. The Dallas Stars get Chris Tanev, another Calgary trade, as the Flames are dismantling their whole team. Tanev is big, and he's gritty, and he's going to help the Dallas defense. Colorado, Now, this is hard to explain. How does Colorado get the leading scorer from the Buffalo Sabres? But they just did. Casey Mittelstadt gave up a bunch of draft picks and prospects to get him at a Buffalo. Sabres have got a lot of young players. They felt they couldn't re-sign everybody, so they traded Mittelstadt. What a great acquisition for Colorado. And, of course, prior to the Flyers, they pulled off the first trade leading up to the deadline, getting Jamie Drysdale from the Anaheim Ducks. So, John, for all of our O Canada followers, unbelievable day, and we're not done yet. You know, last year there were 37 trades at the deadline, an all-time record. So as of noon today, I think the number was 17, and we still got some big names out there probably are going to get moved. But this is what we call moving day in the NHL.
Well, when you rolled in here, you were looking at your phone trying to get the latest updates so you could share it with the audience here. You know, you talked a lot about crazy famous NFL trades. What about the NHL? Are there some really amazing trades that are
worth? There have been some blockbusters. I mean, banging my head on the wall the day that Gretzky got traded from Edmonton to the LA Kings.
What did the Kings give up for that?
Oh, they gave up Jimmy Carson. They gave up a whole number of young prospects, goal scorers, and draft picks. And the Kings got Gretzky. They got Gretzky's right-hand man, Marty McSorley.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, Jari Kurri. I mean, there were a lot of mega names in that deal. Mm. Way back in the day, I was a kid growing up, and I said I couldn't believe this. The trade of Phil Esposito, legendary center.
Oh, yeah.
Bobby Orr was traded. Can you believe Boston traded Bobby Orr? So there have been significant deals. But it's really different now in the NHL. There's the young breed of Ivy League general managers, and these guys have come in, and I think their ideology is, unless you got the number one or number two, number three pick at the top of the draft board in June, the rest of these guys are so far down the road in terms of development, and I need to win now, or I want to win now, or maybe I get one more player that makes us a Stanley Cup team now. These GMs come in and take my number one, take my number two. It doesn't matter because I had a great team. I need one more guy that finishes this product off, you know. Mm-hmm. So it's going to be fascinating to see if this is the new mode of business. I tend to think it really is. You know, Edmonton's got a great hockey team, and the Oilers now add a really gifted second or third line guy in Adam Henrique and a worker bee in Sam Carrick from the Ducks. And they give up a future number one, but the number one's going to be at the bottom of the round. And I don't know how in the NFL they do this. You're drafting 18-year-olds, or you're drafting Euros.
Yeah.
How do you project what they're going to develop into 4 years from now?
Yeah.
And it used to be you couldn't draft guys till they were 21. Then the World Hockey Association came in, and they started signing all the 18- and 19-year-olds. The NHL says, whoa, we have to now make those guys available. But that's so far down the road. I'm not going to say it's a crapshoot, because you find great hockey players lots of places, unless you're drafting number one or number two or number three. But how do you project eight rounds of 18-year-olds and what they're going to turn into? It doesn't make any sense to me.
Well, it's like MLB draft. It's like a real crapshoot, yeah. You know? But what do you think the Ducks are going to do? They're stockpiled with all those picks. Do you think they're going to trade maybe another Herschel Walker trade for the Ducks, or are they just going to build it with young guys?
Yeah, they're just going to build it with young guys. But that sounds great in theory.
Mm-hmm.
Go down to the sports arena. San Diego Gulls in last place. They've had three bad seasons in a row because the Ducks have dealt a lot of players away. Ducks have pulled up a bunch of young players, and some of the players the Ducks drafted just have not panned out. So, it hurts our Gulls franchise. And like I say, what are you putting on the ice for the next 2 years? All these draft picks are phenomenal, and all this cap space is phenomenal, but they can't win you games. You can't win with a pile of 18- and 20-year-olds playing in the NHL as raw rookies. To me, the learning curve is way too steep. So I understand the premise, assets, resources. But geez, there's no guarantee these guys are going to turn out. And what are you going to do between now and then if they ever get good? It's a long road back.
So when's the deadline?
Deadline is tomorrow, Friday, 12 noon.
Pacific time?
Yes.
Okay, so do we expect a lot more deals to go down?
Well, there's still some big names out there. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Pittsburgh's got a goal scorer. They're going to move because they can't re-sign him because of their salary cap, Jake Guentzel. That's one. There's a couple of veteran goaltenders, Jacob Markstrom of Calgary. I'd hate to be a Calgary Flames fan. Holy cow, they're trading all their players. Again, they did this a couple of years ago with Johnny Hockey, Johnny Gaudreau.
Mm.
They traded him. They traded some other the young players. Just in some of these places, you're gutting a franchise, and you're asking the fans buy season tickets and fill my arena, and you're giving me 18 and 19 year olds that are 2 or 3 years down the road, and you're force feeding them.
Yeah,
it's tough. I mean, hey. Our O Canada network probably going to have some opinions on the trade deadline. So we go from that. Let's talk soccer.
Soccer. I mean, there was a big match here in San Diego. Got a lot of rain.
Oh, a lot of controversy. Holy cow. CONCACAF, which is the one that runs the Gold Cup. The Women's Gold Cup is being played here in San Diego. They played the semifinals games in a massive driving rainstorm. Team USA beat Canada. Penalty shots after they had played slogged through 120 minutes in the mud. A lot of criticism from the players. A lot of criticism from people around the country towards CONCACAF. You could have postponed that doubleheader and played it tonight. The sun is shining right now in a pretty good field situation. So they had Brazil shut out Mexico in one semi. USA slopped their way through a win. Their goaltender was phenomenal in the shootout, made 3 saves. So USA is going to play Brazil for the Women's Gold Cup on Sunday. But, I mean, it was just horrible, the weather conditions that they played that game in and the injury factor for players. I don't understand. You put these people out there playing in mud and slop. Now, we had an MLS game last week in Salt Lake City.
Mm-hmm.
One of the coaches got fined $10,000 for ripping the officials. The game was played in a snowstorm.
Really?
And it was slick and slippery and icy. And they played the bloody MLS game.
Unbelievable.
Players' risk. Players' health.
Yeah.
That's got to come into the equation. Other soccer story. This is really interesting. If you follow the English Premier League, John and I can't be the only guys to get up at 4:30 on Saturday morning to watch EPL games on TV. We have talked about Manchester City and this great Norwegian star that they have, who's really turned into a great player, Erling Haaland. He scored 80 goals in his first 84 games playing for Manchester City. I mean, it's a goal-scoring machine.
Wow.
Anyhow, he's got contract. He's got opts out. And there's rumors that people are talking to his people about opting out. And if I asked you in pro sports, if you had the chance to become a free agent and there was a big money offer coming, where would that big money offer come from?
Yeah, but where they drill for oil, I think. Right?
Saudi.
Yeah, exactly.
Evidently, the Saudi Super League wants to talk to Erling Haaland from Manchester City about leaving. This guy scored 80 goals in 84 games since he came from Norway. And he initially broke in as a young player. I think it was with Dortmund in Germany. Now, he can't go to Saudi. All the golfers went to Saudi and have disappeared off the radar. Cristiano Ronaldo's gone to Saudi to play in their league for mega money. Do you ever see him on TV anymore?
No.
So anyhow, that's a big story. Haaland says, hey, I have not made any decision whatsoever. So you got that. And if we're not done with controversy, let's spill over to the next topic on the table.
Okay. Let's go here to PGA. Yeah, another Saudi connection, Lee.
This conversation goes on and on. Just the background, the merger talks have continued. They hope by April the PGA and the LIV will be merged. But the LIV, you know, this past off season went in and stole a couple of more players, including John Rahm. Well, the LIV petitioned the World Golf Ranking Organization. They're the ones that rate all the professional leagues and give players points, bonus points, that count towards those players going to the Grand Slam events, the Masters, the British Open, etc. When the LIV started stealing PGA players, the World Golf Association said, no, we're not going to allow them to compete for points that makes them eligible for Grand Slam events. So after 2 years of arguments and the LIV guys being banned from coming to play, they opened negotiations and I had conversations about LIV, Greg Norman, let us deliver our players. You rank them based on what they're doing in our league and then put those points in and let them be eligible. The PGA said, no, we don't want that. And then the World Golf Organization, which controls those rankings, came back and evaluated and said no. They sent a memo to Greg Norman saying you should withdraw your request to have your players be eligible for our world rankings. We don't recognize your team concept of play. We don't recognize there's only 34 players who have access to your league because that's all you've signed. Mm-hmm. And we're not going to let you qualify. The only guys who can qualify are past winners. And there are, you know, the John Rahms of the world have won a Grand Slam event, which gives them the right to come back in and play right. at the Masters, etc. Those are the only ones, past winners and the guys that qualify in points. LIV is screaming discrimination. PGA's response is, you violated the PGA Tour card by luring these guys, the Mickelsons, the Dustin Johnsons, the Koepkas. They violated their tour card and they went and took the money to go to Saudi Arabia. So you're not eligible. So that's a big point. It's a big arguing point now. The LIV, for the third year in a row, none of their stars outside of the guys that might have been a past Grand Slam winner are going to be able to play, coming back here to play in the Masters, to play in the British, etc.
This whole thing is so screwed up, Lee. Oh. I mean, are they trying to make sure I understand what you said here? Are they trying to intermingle players from the PGA and the LIV
in the Grand Slams?
Okay, to qualify for the Grand Slams, right?
You have to qualify if you're not a past winner.
Right.
Okay. You qualify by all the points you build up and all the tournaments you play, whether you play in the European tournament or you play in Japan or you play on the PGA Tour. That's how you build your points.
Okay, so
the LIV's been banned. The LIV players have been banned from earning points in those tournaments because the LIV's got them playing in the Saudi Arabian League.
Right, yeah, because and there's a grudge mode and everything else going on. Okay, this is interesting because at first I thought, you know, it was a little bit of a, you know, unusual way to kind of, how do you rank players that are in different leagues, you know, like in different universes. But I was wondering if it was like a college football ranking, but it's based on points, but it's like not an apples to apples comparison, is it?
Well, it's apples to apples in every tour except Saudi Arabia. They're not playing medal play.
Right. So how do you calculate points and try to have some normalization of the numbers?
We don't agree with the format of the tournaments you're running, which is team play.
Yeah.
And that's what the LIV is basing their uniqueness is.
Well, all this grudge mode just keeps making everything worse. You know, they need to find ways to come together rather than trying to point fingers.
And they got all these great players over there playing the LIV globally. Nobody watches.
Yeah.
Pay attention.
Yeah. I don't watch any of that.
Joaquin Niemann just jumped from last year to the LIV. He's won the first two tournaments, LIV. The whole world doesn't know that. I know that because I follow this junk.
Yeah.
But it's just there's no solution. We're in the third year of this civil war in pro golf. So we'll see where that goes. Hey, our podcasts are brought to you by North County Eye Center of Poway and Escondido. We all need help with our eyes. These people have been in business serving you in the North County for 70 years. If you're interested, if you need help down road, think North County Eye Center, Poway, Escondido. And by Dixie Line Lumber and Home Center Stores, build it, fix it, guarantee you will enjoy it in 2024, Dixie Line Lumber. John, have we got a ton of topics on the table? Look at the people lined up to take shots at you or take shots at me. Here comes Fans Forum.
Fans Forum. Okay, yeah, our Winnipeg friends jumped in. Matt says, I want to see Hacksaw wearing a Go Jets Go hoodie.
I do have one of those. I'll have to reach into the closet, find it, and we'll add that in. John and I, look at what he's wearing. John and I laugh at each other. I don't own anything in my closet. Doesn't have some type of logo on it.
Yeah, you do. Every time you roll in here, it's a new one.
I don't own a suit of clothes. Honest to God, I do not own a suit.
You don't own a suit?
I don't own a suit.
What do you do if you go to a wedding or something? You wear an NFL film
suit? No, I just wear a sports jacket and khakis, etc.
Well, I've seen you on TV with a suit.
No, it's not a suit.
Oh, it's just a jacket.
I do clean up well on TV on KUSI.
Okay. All right, here, let's go to Callahan. Callahan Max Sports, he says, what's the most surprising move made so far on the NHL trade home front?
Oh, boy. I would say the most disgusting move to me is anything related to Calgary, Alberta. I mean, the fact that they're doing this fire sale again just absolutely shocks the daylights out of me. How do you go back and face your fans after what they did just a couple of years ago when they got rid of Johnny Gaudreau, and a couple of other marquee players, and now you've done it again? And I understand these guys are making big bucks. I understand it's been a rough couple of years for Calgary and there's some injuries, etc. But how do you face your fans? That to me is the most shocking thing philosophically of how you operate in your franchise. You know, and I hate to condemn the Ducks because they had a good run and they did get to the Stanley Cup, and they just keep trading players away. And look at the number of draft picks we have. Well, those guys, you're in last place. And your farm club is in trouble for three straight seasons just because you keep doing this. I mean, I do understand you have to trade guys because you can't pay everybody $8 million a season, and that's the going rate for the top stars. And, you know, Vancouver is so excited. They're in first place. They got 40 wins, and they are right against the cap. And they've been bold. They've traded future draft picks away, and they're all in to try to win this year. Vancouver, 2 years from now, is probably going to be feeling some pain. So it's a real tough balancing act. But, you know, Pittsburgh's got a great team, and they're going to trade this 20, 30-goal scorer, Jake Guentzel, because they can't re-sign him because everybody else is making so much money. So it's balancing act, player talent, balancing act, age injury, balancing act, salary cap. Got to do something different.
How are the season ticket sales for the Anaheim Ducks? Are they still doing well? Or
nah, there's more empty seats there. Mm-hmm. I just wonder if anybody's going to wake up one morning and be critical of that organization, because the media in LA and Orange County, it's like everything's beautiful. It can't be beautiful when you've been in the dumper as long as you have. Look at what the Kings have done. I mean, the Kings are an upper echelon team, rebuilt it with the draft, made some bold trades, took on some huge contracts, handed out some huge contracts. Hasn't always worked out, but yet the Kings, if they get to the playoffs hot and they get to the playoffs healthy, Kings are going to be a dangerous hockey team. You can rebuild it, you can fix it, but this continual exit of marquee players, to me, it's just absolutely stunning to me.
It's exhausting as a fan, you know? Just when you get attached to a guy, the next thing, that he's gone.
Okay, next question.
Next question. Let's go here to Dave. He says, this is so much better than the local sports radio here in Southern Nevada. Thank you for what you do.
Well, thank you. We all do it differently, but we had a great run, what we did on Extra 690 and what we did on the Mighty 1090. The whole landscape has changed. Everybody's management's changed, and everybody's doing it differently. I don't think they're doing it better than we did. Now, maybe we're biased because we were the first ones through the wall, and we did what nobody else had ever done. But, you know, you can sit there. This is if I were king, if I were program director, yes, you can sit there and you can talk about your favorite team or the hometown team. You know, we're based in San Diego. So, yeah, heavy duty dose of Padre talk. Mm-hmm. But you know what? The world twirls around NFL football.
Oh, yeah.
That's huge. And by the way, we got four of the greatest players in the NBA based in Los Angeles. And by the way, there's a certain segment of my audience that are hockey fans. So we're going to do that. And we're going to cover PGA LIV or Tiger Woods controversy or NASCAR, Formula One or Indy. You do all that, you're going to be successful. Why? Because I'm going to hit every hot button of a fan who's got diverse interest. Because they know on my talk show or on my bleeping podcast now, you're going to get the hottest headlines with the opinions and your chance to respond. That's what you have to, if I were king, that's what my sports talk radio station would be. I would not talk Lifetime Padres. I would not talk Lifetime Raiders. I would not talk Lifetime whatever. You got to appeal, John, to all the people out there on the waterfront, including you.
Yeah.
That's how you and I became friends.
That's exactly right.
I regret it every minute of the day.
Well, I just remember in the 1990s, the high-speed sports wire and the deluge of content that came rolling out of my radio in my car. But, you know, a lot of other talk radio guys in sports, a lot of times they don't even talk about sports. You know, they're talking about music trivia and silly things. But is that really getting the ratings? Is that really what program directors want?
There are a lot of stupid people out there that must think it is, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I punch in and out. I listen to a lot of stuff. I'm a huge SiriusXM guy because those are my guys, because I worked there for a while doing weekends for them. But, you know, you punch up a talk show. I heard one show one morning talking about wedding invitations. Oh, yeah? And another one was talking something about paying taxes. I said, well, geez, I got to make sure I circle 8 a.m. on Monday on my calendar, because I bet maybe you're going to talk about menopause on Sports Talk Radio. You got to be kidding me. You're driving me crazy. So, yes, thank you for the compliment. Yes, we did it right. We are bleeping brilliant.
We are bleeping brilliant. Well, you are, at least. All right, let's go here to October. He says, what a disaster with Russell Wilson. They're going to carry that cap hit for what, 2 years? Does Sean Payton survive that long?
Well, he must have had the approval of ownership that this did not work out. This is not on my watch, so let's make a move to get rid of it. Russell Wilson is going to be a nice minimal wage exemption for somebody to get. And you look at all the teams that got problems. I know up in Las Vegas, because I was on a show up there, they're talking nonstop Russell Wilson. Well, does that solve your long-term quarterback issue? Antonio Pierce made the comment at the Combine this past weekend, said we need to rip the Band-Aid off this. We need to go get a long-term quarterback. Well, they had one with Derek Carr, and they got as much as they could out of him, and they wound up letting him go to the New Orleans Saints. Does a one-year or a year-and-a-half rental of Russell Wilson make you a better team, or are you a better team to try to trade up and maybe get access to J.J. McCarthy? Or maybe you really do the in-depth evaluation of Bo Nix, Michael Penix. Could they be the next star in waiting? So, you know, the Raiders, based on their history, could rent Russell Wilson. Pittsburgh is going to meet with Russell Wilson. But that's a short-term rental. Do you not need a real long-term solution? And Raider fan says,
well, the Raiders, why not? You know, there's so many other great quarterbacks. You could do both, right? You could take Russell Wilson for a year while the new guy, the new kid, is kind of learning on the ropes, because you don't want to throw a Bo Nix out there opening day, you know, in September of 2024. It may be too much for him. But wouldn't it be nice to have Russell Wilson and then kind of transition to a Nix or a Drake May or somebody like that?
The only issue is if Russell Wilson's going to come play for 1-5 this year because the Broncos are paying a salary, is he going to want $38 million in the second year of the contract? Are you going to pay him $38 million the second year to be a Raider?
Well, but if you cut him, then who takes the cap hit?
Depends how much of it's guaranteed, what kind of bonus. But
it's complicated.
It's just bad math.
Yeah.
So that's where we are with quarterbacks. The Russell Wilson thing, I still think he's got football left. You know, last year, as much as there had been issues and injuries, they were wrecked by injuries again. He threw 28 touchdown passes and 7 or 8 interceptions. He had a competitive year with a lot of problems around him, but obviously he and Sean Payton didn't see fit together, and that cap number is just monstrous.
Just brutal. All right, let's move on here. Let's go to Roberto, and he says, hey, if the Padres get Tommy Pham, will he be a good fit now with the roster here?
Well, they kind of think so. He had a real bounce back last year. He finished up real upbeat with Arizona. But I'll also tell you, we've seen this movie before. When he was here before, he hit 220, and he was a bit of a distraction. Is he a good team guy? I think he is a good team guy. I think he's a good clubhouse guy, just cut from a different cloth personality-wise. That's a huge question. But I guarantee you, he's not coming to play in San Diego for $1.1 million. And the Padres don't have very much money left in their budget. I think that they'd like to retain some budget space below the luxury tax. So if somehow, some way, they're in the wild card race, they could actually make an acquisition at the trade deadline. But if you're up against that luxury tax and you don't want to go over the tax again because they've done it, you know, a couple of years in a row, Pham can come in and play, and he'd give you innings and maybe hit a few home runs. But, you know, if he starts to eat up, you know, if he wants $5 million, I can't see the Padres doing that.
Have you noticed that some of the older free agents that haven't been signed yet have been turning in their retirement? You know, they've been announcing a retirement. I think Zunino, who's the catcher for the Rays.
Josh Donaldson
was the other one.
Some of that's injury related. Mm-hmm. Some of those guys have a lot of mileage on them and just have had. Josh Donaldson just woke up one morning and just broke down. I mean, you talk about all the issues, whether it's calf, hernia, hamstrings, boom. It turned out to be an old player. Real good baseball career, but at the end of the stage with the Yankees and in the Blue Jays, just hate to see a guy hit 138 who was this power-hitting, real good ball player for a chunk of time.
Yeah, that was a sad story. Let's move on. Let's go to John. How about having the A's play in Lake Elsinore?
Oh.
That's not a bad idea, but they probably wouldn't get the TV money because it's not Northern California.
That's right. This is a mess. That ownership is a mess. Why baseball allowed this mess to go on and on and on. That's a big issue, too. So I don't know what the perfect solution is. I think, and it's easy for me to say because it's not my money, but I think you should take the franchise, you move it, you split your schedule between Vegas and Reno, although playing in Vegas in the summer is going to be a bear. That's
really?
So brutally hot.
Really?
But what you do is you just market it through the state of Nevada and the Rocky Mountain region. Come see Major League Baseball in these venues. But that's 3 years. That's a long time. The union's going to raise hell about this.
Why can't they just go play in Allegiant Stadium where the Raiders play? Can they make it fit?
You're talking about the – oh, no. That's not a baseball stadium. No, it's – that's stayed out like that.
Oh, it's like a big rectangle. Oh,
yeah, it's – yeah, you can't play baseball there. And obviously, the relationship with the Oakland Coliseum is just shredded. And, you know, even if they go back and say, okay, we'll sign a three-year extension to stay and let's make it work financially for you and us and blah, blah, blah. You think fan is Oakland A's fan is going to come to a game? You think they want to support John Fisher, the owner, after what he's done to the heritage of the franchise? And by the way, the product is terrible.
Yeah, I mean, that's why the minor league stadiums are so good, because it'd be a novelty for those fans. Yeah, hey, there's another Oakland A's comment. Let me get this one in real quick for you, Lee. He says, Emmanuel says, with the A's new Las Vegas stadium designated or designed out this week, do you think that Fisher can build it?
Everybody seems to think it's going to get done. There seems to be an upswell, though, recently about using state funding for part of that deal. It's like $380 million is caught in the middle. I guess what shocks me, because Major League Baseball does not do what the NFL does. The NFL becomes a partner in the construction of new stadiums. They guarantee they will pour a certain amount of money into a new stadium, like the Buffalo Bills stadium is being built right now. Mm-hmm. And the owner of the club pours amount of money in it. And then the cities and the counties, or to the states, they put it. It's an equal share thing to come up with the $1.3 billion for the Buffalo Bills stadium. Baseball's never done that. And baseball's got a big checking account. Why would baseball not develop a plan like the NFL stadium plan, where MLB puts money into the pot and the owner of the A's puts money into the pot, then the city and county come? I mean, it almost worked in San Diego with the Chargers, mm-hmm. except your friend Dean Spanos refused to come to the negotiating table to do a deal.
Right.
His eyes were set on going to Los Angeles. So why baseball has not become a, quote, partner to build stadiums? That just blows my mind. You know, we're talking about expansion a couple of years from now. Are we talking Portland? Are we talking Nashville? Are we talking Montreal? What if baseball became a partner in the financing for the new stadium in Portland or the one in Nashville? Or somebody said, go back to Montreal. Why wouldn't you want to be a partner? Because that guarantees the stability of the whole setup.
Well, I think as long as taxpayers are kicking in, they're going to milk that for as much as they can get from it. It seems like that tap is starting to run dry.
Well, you got, you know, no help in Oakland. Mess in Tampa still unresolved.
Yeah.
The Montreal Expos moved, couldn't get it done. So there's a big problem there, and it's no longer the era. And it's just not baseball. It's no longer the era of people walking around with their hands out. Give me a stadium. Build it, pay for it, and give it to me. Mm-hmm. That doesn't happen anymore.
Not anymore.
Carry on.
Okay, carry on. This is from Hugh. And he goes, the ladies' line is open.
Oh, what's my favorite phrase? Raiders fan, be a man. Call the ladies' line. Or Raiders Nation, out of jail on bail. Call now.
Yeah, so did you get a lot of women calling in on the show on the ladies' line?
I got some, yeah, yeah. And sometimes it was dark, so then we turned it into for the San Diego State fans, kiss mm-hmm. my ass tech line.
I remember that. Hey, I want to go talk a little bit about social media. Here's a John Cantara comment. And this one is, let's get rid of Hugh's comment here. And he says, Lee, your podcast with Coach John Cantara and John Riley was outstanding. Even with Riley's mic problems, both of your guys' knowledge, even of today's sports scene, blows most others away. 99 yards. That's from Leisure Fryer.
That was from my NFL call. Chargers were playing in Seattle the year we went to the Super Bowl, and they were having a real tough time against the Seahawks. They were blitzing our brains out. And they had sacked Stan Humphries, the Chargers star quarterback, a bunch of times in the first half. And they pinned us back to the one-yard line. And it was third down, and they come to the line of scrimmage. And I mean, the momentum, we were playing at Husky Stadium in Seattle because the Kingdome was in the process of being renovated. And we're playing in the outdoor stadium. The noise, the bedlam was unbelievable. And Humphries comes out of the huddle, and I just made this comment, third down and 99, what are you going to do? And Jim Lazlevic, one of my color analyst partners, said, throw it. And Pat Curran, third man in the booth, said, throw it deep. And doggone Humphries took a shotgun snap on third and 99 through a slant pattern to Tony Martin, and Tony, because they were blitzing, beat the blitz. Tony Martin caught it, ran across the field, up the sidelines, went 99 yards for a touchdown. So that's what the 99-yard reference is.
I listened to that on the radio, and I remember I was blown away by it. But I just want to talk about Coach Sean Quintero. It was great having him here, Lee. And you know, I hopefully he'll come back and join us a few more times.
Yeah, we're going to kick around a lot of ideas and see if we can just grow this thing. And if he could be part of it, that'd be kind of cool, because there are some of us out here on the street corner who aren't working in sports talk radio that are still bleeping brilliant in sports talk radio.
Well, you know it. All right, let's go here. Dodgers. And he says, this is from R. Loopton. Says, Dodger loving Hacksaw? Hate to see it, but I suppose it was inevitable.
I like everything. Oh, come on. Just because I support Dave Roberts, I wrote a column about Dave Roberts on my website. If you haven't read my website, you're missing an awful lot. I wrote this huge column of Dodgers, Dave Roberts. You know what? I'm sorry, the scoreboard does not lie. How many division titles have the Dodgers won? How many World Series has the Dodgers won? Yeah, they might be the enemy up there on the five. But that's their legacy. They've accomplished it. Respect them. Hope your team gets to do it again, etc. So don't be in grudge mode. Dude's wearing his Padre gear. So if I show up wearing Dodger gear that people sent me, don't be upset. I wear everything that's got a logo on it. But yeah, I want to see the Padres do well. You know, a year ago this time, were we excited?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, the expectation a year ago this time was amazing. But I'm also dealing with the facts. And the facts are, and I hate to use this as a negative, but you lost your owner. You fired your manager. You traded your MVP, Juan Soto. You have lost your $60 million TV contract. You had to pay $40 million luxury tax to the commissioner's office because the contracts your GM gave out did not work out. You lost your Cy Young Award winner, your ace closer. You lost three other starting pitchers in your rotation. Those are the facts. That scoreboard does not lie. And that's what the Padres have to overcome now. So I'm not being negative for the sake of being negative. I'm just giving you the facts that are out there. Hope you understand that.
You know, it's a fun thing to follow, like a storyline on Twitter, is how fans try to figure out if a certain announcer is a fan of a team or if they're a hater of a team. And some fans are convinced of this in certain cases.
You looking at me?
Well, I don't know. I mean, they're thinking you're a Dodger loving Hacksaw.
No, I appreciate the accomplishments of the Dodgers going back to Jackie Robinson's era. I'm a baseball historian. I like balance. I like big plays and talking and getting excited, big plays. I hate losing. I hate when it sets in that wipes out a whole season, but those are the facts you have to deal with. But to be a talk show host is different than being the voice of a team. Your voice of the team, you want the team to do well, and you're going to paint the picture and you'll make some comments. Talk show host, I'll talk about everything about why they won or why they lost. That's part of my job responsibility. It has nothing to do with being a homer or hating anybody. It's just dealing with the facts. No?
Yeah, you're right. Yeah, you're right. But still, fans are always scheming. They think someone's out to get them, you know, with some of these announcers. Hey, let's talk hockey fights here. This was a really hot topic.
Oh, boy.
In social media. From John Hopkins says, hey, what about that heavyweight? Oh, there's actually a second one. This may be a little better than this one. But what about that heavyweight match in Saturday's Toronto Rangers game between Ryan Reeves and Matt Rempe? Or Friday with former teammates Gareth Hathaway and Tom Wilson squared off at the urging of Flyers coach John Tortorella, who whispered into Hathaway's ear in an attempt to fire up the Flyers.
There's been an outbreak of real violent stuff in the league in the last couple of weeks. They've been, first of all, Rempe is a 6'7" guy. His hits along the boards are borderline illegal and dangerous. And he's an accident waiting to happen. You can't have nor tolerate guys running guys head first, face first into the boards. There was an awful hit in the Calgary. What game was it? It was Calgary Seattle game this past week. Terrible hit. The guy that got hit the blow could have broken his neck. You know, and I asked the question, they just suspended the Calgary guy 3 games. This came after the Morgan Riley 5-game suspension. I just asked the question, do we need a death on the ice? Somebody to break their neck because of a cheap shot hit before we're going to take more rules? It's a great game. I understand you do bang. You do check. There will be hits. I don't understand taking 5 strides and planting a guy face first into the boards, into the glass. It's terrible. It's unethical. There's no reason it. You know, you have a right to earn a living as a hockey player. I have a right. I don't have a right to take you out of the game with a brutal check that could maim you, cripple you, just so my team can win. That's not what hockey is. And they've gotten rid of the goons because of the salary cap. And I know there's a segment of society that says you need to have the players police the other guys if things get out of hand. Accidents do happen. Guys get speared. Guys get cut. Guys get hit with hot high sticks, etc. But some of the stuff we've seen, just going out looking for it, I just don't think the NHL needs to market Rempe getting involved with four fights in his first six games. And at the end of the day, I wrote this on social media, and I took a lot of heat. Those two guys in that haymaker fight, estimated time of arrival of CTE showing up that'll take their lives 10 years from now.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, when you got guys getting blows to the face, as many as some of these guys have taken, this is going to end up bad. It's going to end up like Bob Probert and some of these other guys who died or committed suicide. You know, and Gary Bettman, you know, there is no link between fights and concussions or concussions and CTE. You know, what the hell college did you go to?
Really?
You ought to read some of the reports that I've read. So, I mean, it's a great game. We don't need vicious fights to sell the game of the NHL. I'll step away from the podium.
Well, hockey fans in social media were totally on the other side of this one. They insist that fighting is an important part of the game to protect the stars, to police the sport. Some even compared it to a Major League Baseball pitcher plunking a batter. Do you see them as parallel?
Does that mean a pitcher on the mound has a right to throw a ball to hit you in the temple of the head because the prior batter hit a home run? The inherent danger if you hit somebody in the temple or here with a fastball.
But they're getting high stick there, aren't they?
Who?
Well, these hockey players. I mean, they're getting...
Some of those are accidental. If you take the goons out of the game, then there's no goons to do that kind of stuff. And then you don't need guys to respond if a guy gets cheap-shotted and cheap-shots Wayne Gretzky. Because the guys, those goons will be gone. We just don't need... I don't need to throw a fastball in your ear to prove something because I'm pissed the guy before you hit a three-run home run. That's not sport. No,
yeah, I agree with you. No. I mean, I just think we know so much more scientifically about CTE.
Yes.
We got to protect these players. Hey, let's move on here. Talk a little bit about Blake Snell. This is from One Man Nation. He says Blake Snell is a victim of his own for being greedy and listening to Scott Boras, who everyone knows is the king of greediness.
Well, he does things for his clients. He's very successful. By the way, I wrote a column about Scott Boras on my website. If you're a baseball fan, you should check that out. At the end of the day, though, because of the luxury tax and all that, a lot of money's been spent and there's not a lot of money out there left. And then, as we talked about last week, now the situation with Blake Snell, he's a free agent, yes, but the Padres gave him a qualifying offer of $20 million that he rejected. By virtue of rejecting that, anybody that signs Blake Snell now gives up a second-round pick and a fifth-round pick as compensation.
Mm.
So if you've got a team, and I'll just walk through this again, the Yankees were interested in Blake Snell. The Yankees offered a six-year contract. Scott Boras came back and said, I want opt-outs after years 1, 2, and 3. The Yankees said no. Scott Boras said why. Well, he knows why. Because if the Yankees signed Blake Snell, $30 million a year was the deal. Yankees had to pay a tax on the $30 million per season. And because they've been over the threshold so many times, the tax is 110%. So if the Yankees sign Blake Snell, they have to give up $33 million as a tax payment each year. So instead of a $30 million contract, it's really a $63 million contract.
Okay?
So it's $33 million. And because it was offered by the Padres, they have to give up a 2 and a 5 in draft pick compensation. And because of the fact they're over the limit, they forfeit $100,000 of their international signing pool. Well, their signing pool only has $500,000, so you're giving up a chunk of your international pool, too. All to get him, who could opt out after the first year? What kind of business decision is that?
Well, what's Snell going to do? I mean, do you think we're getting near opening day? Do you think he may run out of time and not get signed anywhere?
I find that hard to believe, because there are people still need pitching who have budget space.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I'll circle back. The Angels owner needs to do something to save his franchise and save whatever credibility Artie Moreno has left. Sign him to a 3-year deal. And Give him an opt-out after the second year. He'll be a free agent after the third year. But I wouldn't give him an opt-out after one because you're paying a lot of money and you're giving up draft picks. So I don't want him one and done here because it's the cost of the contract and what you're giving up. Big issue. It's very complicated. Did he put too much trust in Scott Boras? Boras gets results for virtually all of his clients. But we're sitting here right now, just before the Dodgers and Padres leave to go open the season in South Korea. And we're sitting here. There's 2 weeks left in spring, 3 weeks left in spring training. Snell's available. Jordan Montgomery's still available. JT Martinez available. And they're all Scott Boras clients.
Well, do you think Boras is greedy? Is that, I mean, that's what, you know, One Man Nation was saying. Is it greed?
Doing his business for his clients.
Well, yeah. I mean, because I think that ball players are trying to make the most they can. You know, sports talk show hosts are trying to make the most they can. And teams are trying to maximize their budget. So everyone's seeking their self-interest. But is it greed? I don't know. You know, I think he's just trying to get what he thinks he deserves.
It's his business, the way he shapes the business and what he wants done.
Yeah.
He only represents great players. He doesn't represent the 28th guy on your Padres, your Dodgers, or Angel roster.
That's true.
So he wants the marquee guys he can get the biggest payday for with the highest average salary. And if we can creatively finance it, great. And now all of a sudden he's into this opt-out thing at the late last minute to try to get guys, his guys signed. Mm-hmm. You know, Cody Bellinger, Cubs opt out, things like that. So tough because most everybody's spent their money. And because of the price you have to pay, if you've been over the tax limit, maybe I don't want to do $30 million plus a $33 million tax plus give up two draft picks to make that deal happen or forfeit international signing. But it's really a tough call. I think he'll get signed by opening day. But here's the other reality. You know, he's up in Seattle, and that's where he lives in the offseason. And, yeah, he's throwing at his high school stadium. That's not amping up getting ready to throw in a major league bullpen or to get ready for a game. So he's going to be, I think, behind the curve when the season opens. And, geez, you don't want to pay this guy. This guy comes in a little bit late, and then the guy's trying to catch up, and then he gets hurts his arm or something.
And he has a history of slow starts, too.
Yes, on top of it. So very unique set of circumstances. I think he'll be signed. I don't think he'll get the contract he wanted. Be fascinated to see how much longer this goes.
Yeah.
All right, listen, we hope you have enjoyed this. We've kind of gone around a lot of areas, a lot of topics on the table. We're here Mondays at 1 p.m. for a bonus coverage, Thursdays at 1 p.m., our regular podcast brought to you by Dixie Line Lumber and Home Center Stores. 9 locations in San Diego. You've got projects. We want you to talk to them, Dixie Line. And by North County Eye Center, Poway Escondido. We'll all need help with our eyes somewhere down road. If you need help now, or when you need it, think North County Eye Center, Poway Escondido. John, have yourself a great sports weekend. Mm-hmm. We will see you come Monday.
Come Monday. That's a Jimmy Buffett song, I think.
Have yourself a great sports weekend. Thanks for being part of our podcast, making this so successful. Tell your friends, share, and subscribe, and join our insiders group on Hacksaw's Headlines.
Join us again for Hacksaw's Headlines on YouTube, Facebook, and Twitter. And find the audio version on your favorite podcast app.
Touchdown, San Diego!
For more content, go to LeeHacksawHamilton.com.